You're listening to the New City Church podcast. These episodes are recorded live on Gadigal land. Sometimes the audio quality might not be perfect because what you're listening to is a conversation. We don't edit out the chatter. We think that's what makes it authentic. Wherever you're tuning in from, we hope you find these episodes encouraging.
My name is Aiden. My pronouns are they, them. I'm the pastor here, but everybody here knows that already, unless you haven't been paying attention for very long. We've been doing a series, as Sammy said, on... This is actually a much better microphone. Today, on contradictory things Jesus said, so in particular, I've been looking at, I'm just waiting, trying to get it so that the feedback isn't happening. Wow, let's start again, everyone. Woo! Hello, everyone. Welcome to church. My pronouns are they, them. I'm the pastor here. Today we're continuing our series in what weird, contradictory things Jesus said, looking particularly at the theme of judging other people. But before we start that, I want to show you on the projector slide some of our principles of interpretation, which, because I am an academic nerd, I always like to set a methodology, but that just means being conscious of exactly how we're going about creating our knowledge rather than just assuming that our first impressions are always correct because we feel like them. So, here's a review of them. One of the particular things we've been looking at is the way that Jesus' words are very similar to wisdom literature, and we had this core verse, quintessential wisdom literature. Do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you yourself will be just like him. Answer a fool according to his folly, or he will be wise in his own eyes. Does anyone, now that we're up to week three, is anyone feeling like they're experiencing this verse set a little differently than they were at the beginning? Yeah, you want to tell me about it?
I feel like actually now that I've been thinking about it, I feel like it's like a lose-lose situation. Like either like you'll become a fool yourself or you let the fool be wise in his own eyes. So it's like a lose-lose either way. So you just got to choose which one you're willing to lose.
Yeah, I see that. So like the kind of, it's like an apparent contradiction, but like the point is that there's maybe not a right thing to do. So there's something about the moving and the contradicting together. Any other kind of feelings people have been having? No, that's pretty good. I understand why we don't want to go after Chris. He always has really good opinions. The other thing we've looked at
is that Jesus as a teacher wasn't sort of a machine spitting out the great systematic theologies for us to read in the appendix, but rather understood all sorts of rhetorical devices, like Mary and Paul Devil and Andre, and not necessarily in those ways that we might expect, but it's fair to say that he wasn't being 100% completely literal, straight faced the entire time. Sometimes you get a little bit of humor, maybe. Okay.
Next slide. Here's my question for you all today. Is it okay to judge others? Judge including, we'll be using judge in the biblical sense today, which is to say judging in the Greek doesn't have specifically negative connotations. You can also judge something positively. If you imagine kind of like in a courtroom, a judge can sort of, in a civil courtroom, a judge can rule like you have to pay this person $20 or the exact opposite, like so the full breadth. But considering that full breadth, is it ever okay to judge others? Discuss amongst yourselves. 2 minutes. Go.
Hey, is it okay to judge others?
Look.
Okay. Is it, who thinks it's not okay to judge people, either positively or negatively? Hades. Thank you. Do you want to say more? Whoops.
As Jesus teaches, don't judge or condemn others because we don't know what that other person's going through or what our own mental health is going through.
Yeah. Who thinks it's okay to judge others? Why?
Yes, and then also I think we just do it naturally. Like if you're talking about judge in like the neutral sense where you're just making a decision regarding something's value, then we do it all the time. Like even just like we all made a judgment today about whether we're going to come to church. So you just do it naturally, I think.
Yeah, like what's the difference between decision making and whatever we mean when we say judging?
I think we're called to be wise in how we make decisions. I think it depends whether you take the word judge as meaning that broader sense. I think often people use the word judge in a really different sense, or not a different sense, but in a very specific sense of like expressing a judgment in a harmful way to others. I think that's where we need to be careful.
Who else says it's okay to judge others sometimes?
We talked about it in the context of safety. And actually judging something, like I use the example of like, I likely wouldn't go up and start a conversation with someone in a MAGA hat. Like, I wouldn't feel safe in that situation. I've made a judgment and I'm okay with that at that point in time. And so I think that for me personally, yes, it is, as long as that isn't then used to cause harm. Like, my judgment can be kept to myself. I don't have to do anything with it. Yeah.
Anyone else?
I think the purpose behind the judgment is very important, and specifically if we're talking about judgment in, like, a legal sense, like throwing stones at someone, harm reduction, for me, is always the most important thing. If you're judging someone in a legal sense, to get them away from someone, for example, giving someone a restraining order, that's judgment, but I think it's judgment in the sense that it provides the most harm reduction.
What, for those of you who think there is a kind of judgment that you should never do, what would you define that as?
Judgments on things that other people do that aren't hurting anyone, that you just don't like, that you hold in resentment. Nothing ever comes of it. Nothing changes. You're hurting yourself at that point. I don't like how my boss does his hair. It looks stupid. Doesn't help anyone. Doesn't change anything. I just feel bad every time I look at my boss.
Judgment without the authority to do so. So when you're a judge in a courtroom, for example, you like they have the authority to do something and to say it. We are not called to judge each other's like Christian and faith-based things because we don't have that authority. God does.
Do you think we have the authority for some kinds of judgment but not other kinds of judgment?
Yes, like what to wear. I have the judgment for that. I have the judgment for lots of different, of the scary person or something like that. I have my judgment there because I have the authority in that situation. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. Who's going to read our Bible passage, number one? Yes, Leona.
My favorite. Okay. Matthew chapter 7. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye.
Who's familiar with this passage? That's less of you than I thought it would be, actually. Oh, no, maybe the same one. What does it mean? Anyone have an interpretation or one that they've been taught?
The classic one that I was taught was, like, at the end of the day, we are all like sinners, and sure, maybe like you think that oh, like, I'm helping out my friend or someone that I know by pointing out, like, oh, like, you could do this differently. But at the end of the day, like, you yourself are also a sinner. Everyone is a sinner. Let us not judge others for being sinners when we ourselves are also sinners.
Is that just that?
Yeah. I might have just been lounging. Still, it was always taught to me in a sense of it is an opportunity for self-reflection, that it is not meaning that you can't notice things in other people, but it should inspire self-reflection on your own activities. So if you see something from someone else, take that as an opportunity to identify if that is something that you also do within yourself. So it's not that you can't point out something, but that you need to point it out with an air of humility that acknowledges you might need to be working on the same thing.
Hades, do you have an interpretation? Basically that? Yeah.
What I think is interesting is it seems like at the end he's saying people, you can judge, but only if you're cleared yourself of the plank, or if, like, only if you've fixed your own shit, you can judge someone else or give them advice, which is interesting. Also, interesting tidbit, I was pretty much never taught this verse growing up. I do know it, but it's interesting, like, in the church I was in, they never brought it up.
That is interesting. Do you think that that's like a helpful, not you specifically, the royal y'all, does saying first you have to think that you're the bee's knees before you can judge other people, is that really kind of like, surely most people who go around judging other people inappropriately already think that they're the bee's knees. What does the do not judge you two will be judged mean? Maybe, like, not like objectively, what does it mean, but...
So since this was originally like to the Pharisees and things like that, is my understanding at least, right?
Some of the
maps, the crowds. I was taught that was from to the Pharisees.
Really?
Yeah.
Someone double checked. Oh, the Pharisees would have been there, definitely.
Okay. Yeah, I was taught about, this was towards the Pharisees, about pointing to each other, judging each other's faith. Issues about that, and therefore we will be judged by Jesus, God, when we try to get to heaven, basically.
Yeah.
So therefore don't judge that sort of thing, because you're going to be judged just as harshly and you're going to turn out just as badly.
Yeah. I think, I mean, you're right that theme comes up with Jesus and the Pharisees a lot in a lot of very similar passages. Do you all think that it's God doing the judging, the return judging?
Yeah, so I learned that if you judge harshly someone, God is going to judge you in that same, you know, like, so you better think good of people, otherwise God is going to think exactly the same of you and you're like screwed.
In recent years, I've taken it to more just Jesus reading it as this is what's going to happen. If you judge people, they're going to judge you back. Like, it's not God that's doing the judging. It just says, do not judge, you two will be judged. If you make fun of someone's hair and you tell them that, they're probably going to also harbor the same kinds of feelings about you, and it will be reciprocated. Within the measure that you use, it will be measured to you. If you're really awful to someone, they're probably going to be awful to you back. I've read it in recent years as Jesus just stating a fact of life, that you will probably have a better time if you don't go around judging people, because then they're not going to feel like they need to judge you.
Does anyone have a similar interpretation?
I mean, I guess in the sense of social judgment and like people seeing the same thing back at you. I was just thinking of the thing I talked about with my grandparents recently of like a pastor preaching, don't get divorced, and then the pastor gets divorced. That judgment will be reflected back on them significantly more because they were teaching those people, and now those people are going to look at them with the same scrutiny. There's not a judgment against people getting divorced.
I'm making a joke.
I think looking at it now, I do think it's do not judge or you two will be judged by your peers. And I think it's particularly relevant because Remember that sermon that Curly did on the woman who was about to get stoned by the crowd? And then Jesus said, whoever is free from sin should cast the first stone. And no one cast a stone because no one's free from sin. So, yeah.
Thank you. I'm leaning towards that more too, mostly because in this, for two reasons. One is, that's just kind of like a wisdom literature thing to say. Like, you know, don't judge people. They'll judge you back the same way. But also because the second anecdote is not about like you having a conversation with God. That's like two people having that conversation together. So I've been thinking about that recently. What's the plank symbolize? Do you need a multiple choice?
I always thought it was just like a speck of sawdust times a bajillion makes a wooden plank. So it's kind of like, I guess I always thought of it as like, you might be like bearing this greater sin that you're not even aware of, which is crazy because it's a plank in your eye. Whereas like a speck of sawdust, like, I don't know, like people can, you can still look around with a speck of sawdust. And then it's very like, oh, like it's like, imagine someone has a plank in their eye and they're like, hey, you've got like a bit of sawdust in your eye. You'd be like, bro, worry about yourself. Like, you've got a whole plank in your eye. Like, how are you seeing me right now? So I always thought it was just like, I thought the plank was the point, was like, oh, like it's such a, maybe not necessarily a bigger sin or whatever, but it'd be like a, something that's very obvious in your face, like it's literally right there, and you're worrying about something that comparatively is like more minute. I don't know, that could be wrong, but that's how I saw it.
I've heard interpretations that it's like the same sin that you're trying to point out in somebody else, but like way bigger in you, like it's a projection, or maybe just like a different sin that's more your business. I've also, I read a scholar who was like, no, the plank is the quickness to judgment, right? Like that's what the plank is in your eye. Just some things to float out into the soup. Who knows what a hypocrite is?
In layman's terms, I guess a hypocrite is someone who blames someone else for doing something that they themselves do.
Like someone who's lying about their true, or blaming someone else specifically.
No, that's okay. So casting judgment on someone for doing something that they themselves do. So I don't know. You are breaking your diet and that's really bad, and I'm apparently a vegan that eats chicken nuggets. Like that kind of stuff.
Chicken isn't vegan?
I'm also not vegan.
Anyone remember other key times in the Bible with hypocrite? Anyone's got any verse memories about something? No one remembers hypocrite being used a single other time in the entire Bible. Fair enough. Hypocrite is actually the name of a theater actor in ancient Greece. Yeah. To refer to like their like stage sona, if you will, or the character that they're playing, which I found really interesting because, so like the other times Jesus talks about hypocrites, almost exclusively when we're talking to the Pharisees. In fact, it's only this one and one other time that he uses the phrase hypocrites that it's not directly at the Pharisees explicitly. So there you go. Like, woe to those who just happen to be in the marketplace at prayer hour. So, oh no, you have to do your prayers in the marketplace where everyone can see you. You actor. You performer, you hypocrite. Woe to those who make huge burdens of law following for others, but you yourself won't lift even a finger to help them. You hypocrite, you performer, you actor. Which I found really interesting because I had always assumed, because hypocrite in English kind of specifically means that specific kind of duplicitousness on purpose, maliciously. But the idea of hypocrite can almost be even like kind of well-meaning performance. So, might come back to that. Like, why knighting? Oh my god. Okay. What's my next? Oh, here's some fun intertextuality. I'm sorry, it's so small. I'll read it out to you. Jesus as a rabbi was working intertextually with the other wisdom literature of his day. He wasn't just being like, bam, golden tablet from heaven, here's my opinion. Here is some stuff from the Babylonian Talmud, which you can imagine as sort of the next block of religious texts that Judaism follows, that is recording oral traditions from around the same time as Jesus. And here's what some of those rabbis said. And Shmuel says, if one habitually claims that others are flawed, he disqualifies himself with his own flaw. The flaw he accuses them of having is in fact the one that he has. Or, Ah Tafun said, I wonder whether there is anyone in this generation who accepts reproof. For if one says to him, remove the mote from between your eyes, he would answer, remove the beam from between your eyes. Any thoughts on this intertextuality? Yeah, Jesus was a plagiarist and we're canceling him. End of sermon.
I think it is interesting that when you read the biblical version of the text, it does read as sawdust to plank being the same sin in each person. But this is almost explicitly clear in the fact that it doesn't matter what the other person's problem is. Your problem is the fact that you've noticed and pointed it out in someone else. It's not the same thing. It's just like in the act of doing, you have performed the thing that is the plank in your own eye.
I think it's interesting that this rabbi is talking about how no one in this generation can accept correction. And the response is not like, is just like a sassy, don't tell me what to do response. But then when Jesus is reframing it, he's saying it's like also true though. It's interesting, huh? He's playing with that a little bit. Okay, let's go to the next thing. Oh, this is another Bible passage. Does someone other than Leona want to read this? All right, bestie.
Therefore, do not go on passing judgment before the time, but wait until the Lord comes, who will both bring to light the things hidden in the darkness and disclose the motives of men's hearts. And then each man's praise will come to him from God. 1 Corinthians 4:5.
Later in the New Testament, do you see this as developing the same ideas as Jesus, changing them, expanding them, exactly the same thing in different words? Any new information?
It seems like this is going like the first verse is very like, you now here. You can, like, you are the man with the plank, and then the other person is the one with the sawdust, and it's just you guys here on earth right now. Whereas, like, this kind of makes it, like, an extension in that, like, do what that Matthew 7 said, but also the judgment will come eventually, but from the Lord. So I feel like it's sort of, like, extending on, like, what Jesus said in Matthew. Like, it's like, oh, there's another part of the story that will come after. But until then, you should follow what I said before.
Has anyone been taught a variation of you don't judge people, but God's going to come in and be really serious about it? I got permission to tell the story because it's really good. My partner, Grace, was forced on a date with a boy that was family friends with her. He later went into the priesthood, so it was probably not going to work out. And he said on the date, you know, I don't judge gay people. The big man upstairs will judge him. On their first date. So that's, is that like, you know, healthy and normal? I don't know. I'm going to say no. It's worth saying that in trauma hermeneutics, which is people who look at the way that religious texts are often formed in response to specific traumas, that the desire for there to be a final moment where hidden things are revealed and unjust things are put just is really, really important and can be really healing for people. So, like, for us, whom have not experienced, maybe, for me, who's not experienced any terrifying injustices in my life, the idea of God coming in and checking it all out and putting it all into is like, that seems like a bit much. But I do want to recognize that, like, kind of God's idea of it is mine to judge and I will reveal motives and I will repay can be really important for some people. And it's a theme that's big in the Old Testament as well. I just want to point it out. All right, what's next? On the other hand...
Watch out for false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves. By their fruit you will recognize them. Do people pick grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Likewise, every good tree bears good fruit, but a rotten tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, and a rotten tree cannot bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus, by their fruit you will recognize them.
What mean?
In the classical sense, if you want to identify if someone's motives are pure, see what actions they do. Yeah. If the actions that they do align with what they say, then they most likely intend to mean the same thing. If the actions and the results that come out of what they say is not the same as what they say, they are duplicitous. It's always the way I've been taught.
So tree is motives, fruit is actions? Yes. Any other interpretations?
I see this passage used quite often in us progressive circles, like in terms of how do you work out what's good theology, like what, like, and you look at the fruit, like, and that's like how we get, like, good theology versus, like, toxic or harmful theology is you look at what the impact is on people. And so it's kind of, we normally interpret it as, like, the theology or teachings.
So tree is theology and the fruit is impact? Anything else? Only two interpretations for this passage? Yeah, good. Does everyone just agree with one of those two ones that already happened? It's just about trees and fruit, guys. Come. Yeah.
And say I disagree with Sammy, just because I think intention versus action becomes kind of meaningless when you could say a bad person is saying plainly what they believe, and then their actions follow that. That doesn't necessarily make it a good fruit. It just makes it an honest one.
Yeah, or I do know people who have really like honest and caring intentions, but do really harmful actions as a result of those intentions.
Just on what you just said, does this passage tell us how to watch out if we ourselves are being false prophets? In that, I guess, in that you can, I don't know, I was kind of just, when I heard this, I was like, oh yeah, it's like the whole mantra that like the Reformation Project kind of like builds a lot of what they do on in terms of like, I guess, if theology is harmful or not. And I've known a lot of really lovely people who have kind of like not unpacked a certain theology and not realized that it's hurting other people. And a lot of the Bible kind of like, a lot of what Jesus' teachings are kind of encourage us to look at ourselves as well. And I'm wondering if this is one instance.
I think reflecting on yourself is always a good question when you're looking at the things Jesus taught. Was anyone taught, like, you can know by someone's a true prophet if they can do miracles, and if they can't do miracles or speak in tongues or heal people, then they're not? No one? Yeah. Unfortunate. Did you believe it? Just never believed it. You always thought it was a dumb idea?
I didn't really fit in with all the ideologies of churches, so that's why I'm here. Hello.
I think one of the difficulties in making the fruit the actions and the trees the intent is that we earlier criticized the people for being hypocrites, for performing actions, but having maybe different intents. So it's possible, I think, also to perform good actions. That intent, yeah, we see.
I also have heard similar sort of thing about the tongues and things of that if the like church is good, then you'll see like the congregation gaining gifts. And if they're not, then the church isn't good in that way.
If more people are coming to the church, it must be a good theology, right? Right? Mm. Some things I wanted to point out here are we have some intertextualities with fruit, like Jesus curses a fig tree later for not producing any fruit. There's the sort of, maybe it's like the fruits of the spirit has been brought in as a connection before. People have brought in like the fruit of the garden as like kind of in that as well. Some things to kind of mess around in. The other thing that I want to point out is the two goods, good tree and good fruit, and the two bads, bad tree, bad fruit, are four different words in the Greek. Part of that is because, no, my Bible reader, have fun, is because Greek has different words to adjectiva, to put to describe things and describe doers, and the trees are kind of doers in the grammar. But it's interesting to point out that the tree itself isn't as inherently morally bad as the fruit is. So previous teachings of this that have been like, some people just destined for hell, doesn't really kind of hold up to this description. That's why I've chosen disease tree as a translation here. I do, like, it does remind me of how one of the things I use to evaluate theology is to ask, what kind of person does this theology make me? And I think some of you have brought up that theme as well. All right. Who wants to read this one? Leona's not here, so it's going to have to be one of you.
Hi. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and in your name drive out demons and in your name perform many miracles? Then I will tell them plainly, I never knew you. Away from me, you who act as if there was no law.
This is a very difficult passage for many reasons, but I'm bringing it in for this particular argument to counteract that idea that the fruit is some kind of expression of power or like gifting, because clearly, like, Jesus is distinguishing from between people who are able to do these sort of divine acts of power and people who are able to act as if there is a law, which we discussed earlier, previously, is about loving God and loving one another. On the other hand, I'll read this. John said to him, Teacher, we saw someone casting out demons in your name, and we tried to prevent him because he, like, wasn't following us. But Jesus said, Do not hinder him. For there is no one who'll perform a miracle in my name and be able soon afterward to speak evil of me. For he who is not against us is for us.
This sounds like both this, the previous verse, and 1 Corinthians. Do not judge other people. The time coming will in light reveal what motives lie in men's hearts. I feel like this is Jesus saying, I know what his motives are. They're fine. Don't stress. You don't get to say what his motives are one way or another. That's from me. Previous verse, in saying that they are the people who are pretending as if there is no law, the hypocrites. Feel like that's what's happening here?
So you think it's just like specifically this guy that Jesus says is okay?
Kind of, yeah.
Hmm. Does anyone have a more broad idea of this passage? Like, you know, just like, you know, if you know what...
I feel like it's very, like, context dependent. Like, in this case, he's probably thinking about, like, hey, like, this is some good rep for him. This is great in the time and place that there is. Jesus is new to his ministry, relatively, doing miracles. Some other guy heard about him and it's like, oh, like, this guy has authority. I'm going to call upon his name to do some same miracles. That's, like, it's a good thing for his reputation. And even if that guy turned around and started saying bad things about Jesus, like, nobody knows that guy, right? Or, like, it's, like, the proof's in the pudding because the miracles were done in Jesus' name. Whereas fast forward to the other one, which is, I assume, talking about some sort of end times, where there's been people who assumedly maybe wasn't at the start of Jesus' ministry, but like further on, maybe after he's had the whole death, resurrection, etc., have been doing miracles in his name, calling upon his name, doing lots of things. As you know, there's a lot of people in this world who will say things, do things, and say it has something to do with Jesus, even when it, for someone who has any common sense, might be like, no, that's nothing to do with Jesus. And some of them may or may not be miraculous, but the point of it there is that they're like, just because they were, it's not about whether things were miraculous, it's about the intention behind it. And intentions that are in line with Jesus are always going to be like for good, whereas like in these situations, that's not necessarily the case. They're probably doing it for their own kind of platform or whatever, because by the time of that, then it's like, I don't know, especially like if you apply it to modern day, then Christianity has spread around the world quite a way. Lots of people know about it. Lots of people can see its legacy and want to kind of like jump on that bandwagon and use it for their own gain. And in the case of like someone, that something happening in literally like AD 30 or whatever, then there's like, this is before it's had any legacy. It's probably having like a bit of a trend at the time, but like it's just some dude at the end of the day, and it's not as big or as meaningful, I guess, maybe.
Maybe I'm not thinking that deep like into it, but when I read it, I think that this is like Jesus being more inclusive of people. And because we see the Jewish people were very exclusive, like when you hear anything they say in the Old Testament or even in the New Testament, it's like us against them, and it's our Jesus, our Messiah. He came for us and to save us. So I think it bothers me sometimes when I see that Jesus saying, I came from the Jews. I'm like, what? But I think this is the kind of leap of hope that I have, that Jesus actually like including other people and everyone. So yeah.
Thank you. Sorry, just a quick one. Like, I was looking at this more in the context of the time, and I kind of feel as though like this person perhaps may not have been following Jesus, heard about Jesus, and just on a whim was like, I'm going to try and whip out a miracle using his name. And then he was astonished, like, oh my goodness. And then that spread the word of Jesus, and that made that person a believer potentially. And so I guess, I don't know, that could be a scenario.
Yeah, I see that.
I'm kind of inclined. My heart leans towards Lisa's interpretation in that, like, Jesus is like, I don't actually mind if the guy's got a little bit of a funky doctrine. If he wants to heal people, like, in the name of God who has good gifts for people, like, why stop them? Like, maybe, like, you know, it's not, I don't know, if someone was like, yeah, I'm gonna, like, do heart surgeries in the name of the almighty William, the, you know, deity of the heavens, I'd be like, okay, well, that's weird, but I guess it's fine that you're doing heart surgeries for free. I don't know. Before I ask you if God can judge, are we meant to judge for false prophets then? Because that passage did seem to suggest that we should be judging whether people are false prophets or not.
It made it sound very, like, would you not have to be wary of false prophets? Here's the tree, here's the fruit. Know the difference. Requires you to be able to judge them by seeing what their fruits are and then making a judgment on if they're a false prophet or not. Yeah. So, yes.
I feel like with this passage in particular, he's not saying not to judge false prophets. More of like, it sounds like his disciples come and be like, oh, this person was casting out demons in your name. And Jesus is like, so, like, you know, just let them be. He says, like, do not hinder them. Just kind of like, let them be. And then what will happen, I guess. So he's more of just saying, don't make a big deal about it if you see other people doing those miracles.
In the verse that we just read before this, on the previous slide, it said to judge and like to be wary of false prophets. So I'm pretty sure we're supposed to be.
How do we judge false prophets if we're not meant to judge?
I don't know.
Earlier you said that we don't judge the things we don't have the authority to judge. Does that mean that we have the authority to judge for false prophets? Don't know. Anyone else have a yes, no on that?
I'm going to like say something crazy. What if Jesus is teaching us how to make judgments this whole time, and the first thing that he teaches us in terms of making judgments is to not judge in a certain way that people think of doing? And then what if he exemplifies this by being like, hey, we should like watch out for false prophets, but then uses this case study to be just like, just because someone's not one of our buddies doesn't mean they're a false prophet. But it's more like you can't be clicky like that, but it's more like you want to look inside, you want to look outside for people who are causing harm, essentially.
I'm just going to read this out. Discernment is the objective ability to distinguish or perceive differences, while judgment often involves assigning a moral value, finality, or condemnation to those observations. While the two concepts overlap, as effective discernment, sorry, my eyes, often leads to a judgment, the distinction lies in the motive and outcome of the evaluation.
Okay, so we've got don't judge. When you judge people, they'll judge you back to the same measure. But do make a judgment about whether people are false prophets, which has something to do, and you do that somehow with the fruit of whatever, whichever the fruit means. And God will expose the motivations of people, but only on the last day. But also, it's not quite about motivations, because sometimes there are people who do good things, but God isn't a big fan. And then there's people who do good things that people aren't a big fan of, but God is a big fan of. Do you think I've summarized how we've done so far? Okay. Can God judge? Yes. I'm seeing some nods. Does anyone say no? Does anyone say yes, but I hate it? Okay. This is the verse we looked at earlier, which does seem like, you know, the New Testament is picking up that same thread of God being the ultimate. I don't want to say judge, because that feels so negatively connotated. The ultimate, like, guy with the measuring tape? The ultimate, I don't know. Sometimes, in an early passage we talked about, it was written in parallel, however you judge others, you'll be judged, and the measure you use will be measured to you. And that makes me imagine someone with a ruler that's like measuring like how long a city is, which is a little bit more kind of morally neutral for me in a way that is helpful for me to not immediately hate what's happening. On the other hand, what's next? Who's going to read John? John is like the weird gospel.
Anyone who believes in me, shouted Jesus in a loud voice, doesn't believe in me, but believes in the one who sent me. Anyone who sees me, sees the one who sent me. I've come into the world as light, so that everyone who believes in me won't need to stay in the dark. If anyone hears my words and doesn't keep them, I'm not going to judge them. That wasn't why I came. I came to save the world, not to judge it. Anyone who rejects me and doesn't hold on to my words has a judge.
What do you think the end of this sentence is? Don't look it up. Just tell me what you think the end of the sentence is going to be. Yeah.
The person's already judged.
Oh, yeah?
It's already defined.
By who or what?
For this judge that Jesus is
like
talking about.
Decided?
Yes.
Mm. Any other?
I mean, that's what I think, and that's what I've heard.
Yeah, any other guesses?
In my father has a yeah like yeah has a judge in God, right?
Yeah, right guys. That's what I in themselves. Ooh, we were activating our imagination now. Has a judge in their peers, perhaps in heaven? Okay, do you want to find out? Okay, what's next? The word which I have spoken will judge them on the last day. That's kind of weird, right? In the next slide, I put it all in the one thing so you can see. It's not like Jesus is like, I won't judge them, but I will judge them later. There's like this weird, like the word that I have said. It's going to grow legs. What's up? What mean?
Is John the gospel that starts off by saying the word was with God and the word was God in the beginning?
Yeah.
So I feel like that's a consistent theme here, use of the word.
Like Jesus is saying the Jesus which I have spoken will judge them on the last day. Any other thoughts? Why wouldn't he just say Jesus then? Did he just kind of want it to be a bit more oblique?
He could be differentiating between him now and his like present ministry, because he's not here to judge in the present, but in the future. I mean, it's kind of different whether it's the Father or him judging on the last day. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's reasonable. Any other thoughts?
Just going to throw out some sort of like cosmic act of creation where it's just like, it's like a creation of knowledge in a way, in that there's just like understanding that some things kind of just like get judged. I don't know if that makes sense.
Do you mean like there's just already a sort of cosmic right and wrong that will naturally expose people's actions? Do you mean something like that, or?
This could be totally wrong, I guess, but when I hear the phrase, the word which I've spoken will measure them on the last day, it makes me think of like someone who hears like a calling inside, knows the word that was spoken, but gets to the end of their life and looks back with regret. And so that's the judgment, that the pain of having lived out of step with whatever it was inside that she knew to be true. Not sure if that's...
I like it. It's just something in the sense that, like, it's different to if Jesus was like, I'm just going to come back and be like, psych, here are all my rules, actually, did you follow them? But the idea that, like, there's already a consistency of, like, a way we could have been looking at our lives and living our lives, that is self-exposing. So in a way, like, it is, like, kind of got Jesus as the word, like coming back on the last day to reveal the motives of humans' hearts, but it's not like a fun, arbitrary mystery reveal, but something kind of consistent that we've already been given. I also just like that it's, I mean, John's use of the word as the incarnate Christ, it's so much more expansive than just Jesus will be back on the last day to check whether you subscribed to the theology. You know, there's something, it's bringing in all of the theology and all of the stories and all of the love Jesus had for his friends into like the question. It's bringing the work that we're doing now into the question. Like right now we're kind of are measuring ourselves against like the word of Jesus, right? Because we believe that there's something that reveals our motives or exposes our actions or teaches us wisdom. And it's almost like Jesus is saying that's going to be made perfect, made complete on the last day. Like that's not, you already have all of the tools. But also I will help you, you know. And the Holy Spirit. Absolutely.
Did you call this the mechanism for finding the plank in your eye?
How do you mean?
Like, I guess like the word is kind of like making things, and then we're using the metaphor of like visibility and stuff again, and it's like making things visible, and then you're like, I guess the complaint in that specific passage was when you have a plank in your eye, how can you even see to move that guy's speck? And here it's just being like, now you're going to see like the kind of judgments that are kind of inside and outside of you, and you're going to do this in the right way that doesn't make you a hypocrite this time.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, like, I do think, like, there's power in God's, I was going to say the power in God's teachings, but honestly, kind of the power in God's relentless love of us that helps us to find, like, if we want to go looking for our planks, I think that is, like, found in, like, the safe parenting of God's love for us. The other thing I like about measuring is that you're not measuring with your ruler other rulers. Like, it's not like he's got like a little cubit length ruler. That's an Old Testament joke. Checking to see if you've all got cubit length rulers, but rather you're using that ruler to measure buildings and cities and things that you've made, and that there's like, it's not about like kind of conforming to a certain standard of perfection, but there is sort of a standard in the measurement sense, and that this is the way that we can build a framework of our world and understand, you know, and fulfill our purposes by building structures that are sound because they're properly square, unlike my room in my apartment, which is not square. Do I have anything after this? So is it okay to judge people?
Yes. Oh, no, but I'm going to explain. So I'm from Brazil. And in Brazil, you need to judge when you go out by yourself and you have a phone. So I think when I read this, I think in the sense of harm. I think if there is a possibility that you are going to get harm, like hurt or something like that, or people around you, and you have the opportunity of, okay, maybe I'm not going to open up with this person. You're making a judgment. But that may be the best thing for you to be safe. So I think in the sense of safety, of course, there is mental safety, there is physical safety, there is a range. But I think, yes, like we should judge, not in the sense of looking at someone, I think that person, but like in the sense of safety, I think, yes.
Yeah. Any other like kind of coalescing thoughts? Do you feel like Jesus started off being like, don't judge, and then gave us a whole bunch of ways of judging people, kind of? Or ways of evaluating ourselves and others? No? You can disagree with me, it's cool.
I feel like they've given two different classifications. There's like judging in a social sense, where it's like, I'm judging you in the sense of that you would judge Hippocrates or hypocrites. You're performing something that is not true to your intent, and the actions that you're performing is not like you are, which is our first idea of like planks and sawdust. Then there's a second classification of judging, I feel, that he has of the actions are like absolute. There is the actions of the fruit falling from the tree. There is the actions of the man who is, you know, casting demons out in God's name, even though he doesn't follow God. Those actions being right and pure is a separate kind of judgment in the sense that those trump any feelings we might have about them. So if the actions are creating something good, then we cannot judge them. If it is just your own misgivings about someone socially, you also shouldn't judge them, not from God's perspective, but just because it's not a good thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something to be said that, like, you know, that Jesus particularly was like, but you do need to be evaluating the ways people are teaching you to follow God and, like, not just kind of be like, oh, I'm sure they have my best interests in heart. But then, yeah.
I was just thinking about your previous question. I was just like, what if when Jesus is just like, yeah, no, hold off on making that snap judgment, then it's like when you actually hold off on making that judgment, then you're kind of like stuck in that like weird limbo of like, ooh, I wonder what the right thing is. And then that brings out a lot of curiosity. And then through that curiosity, we have all these lenses that we've brought in just then. And those lenses actually help you to make a more informed judgment that kind of like you get time to think through. It's not like an impulse.
Yeah. Any final thoughts, questions, complaints? Okay, here's what I learned today. The instruction to not judge others is just not just another thing for me to like accept as a complete prohibition of my life and live in fear that I might be accidentally judging people when I'm not meant to do it at all. But perhaps it is a call to assuming the best of others, compassion for others, at the same time not letting that compassion be weaponized to allow people who are in power over others to perpetrate harm, and that maybe I am decent enough at making judgments that I can call people out that I think are creating systems of harm. Maybe there's a way that I can watch out for someone who is teaching badly, but still not judge them as my sibling. That there's a sense in which God will reveal everything at the end and will be the judge at the end, but also that that's not some kind of mysterious appeal to God's character that God's going to reveal at the end, but rather part of the same lesson God's already been teaching us, that God's already giving us the things we can measure ourselves against, because being able to measure things helps us to build things that are good. I also feel a little of comfort that my job is to just remove planks from my eye rather than remove specs, because I think that hopefully is a lot easier. How does that sound for what we've looked through today?